Then, in this second lecture, I will start with malicious insiders, which is the next topic that you hear. But in between, I have posted an article about achieving resilience in critical infrastructure, which is an article we had in Hawaii International Conference on System Sciences last year. Implementation methodology of the resilience framework. So that you can consider as an extension of the lecture that I had on high reliability organizations. So now to the topic on malicious insiders. So here you see a content of the lecture. We will first see what is an insider attack, what kind of problem is this for organizations, and then about the management and the way they misperceive the threat, how important the organizational policies and culture are, then the model capability, motivation, opportunity, CMO, generic model of insider attack, about the role of precursors in insider attacks, the approach by Einwechter and Schulz, studies done in during the last 10 years, or actually 12 years, at Carnegie Mellon, studies where I contributed, and then some findings of these studies in the two critical infrastructures, banking and finance, and well, banking and finance is actually part of the critical infrastructure, and then of other kinds of critical infrastructure. There are more studies done by the team at CERT in Carnegie Mellon, and there is a recent book about that which I will refer to. So there's numerous definitions as to what an insider attack is. One of the oldest and established definitions was by Schulz and Shumway. So it's about that users who are authorized to access systems intentionally misuse them for all kinds of purposes. Could be for own purposes, for gain, or it could be just to make havoc attacks and create problems. And there the classic reference is the book by Schulz and Shumway, Incident Response, a Strategic Guide for System and Network Security Breaches, that appeared in 2001. Then there is an alternative definition by Einwechter in his work Preventing and Detecting Insider Attacks Using Intrusion Detection Systems. That's what IDS is. He defined an internal attacker as someone who is entrusted with authorized access, who instead of fulfilling the assigned responsibilities, manipulates the system to exploit it in some way, to damage it, to steal sensitive information, or to make money in some way. So insider problems, they must be taken seriously. They don't happen as often as external problems, but they can be very damaging. They can damage an organization in all kinds of ways, financially, of course, in the bottom line, but they can also make a very strong impact on the reputation of the organization. They can be very negative for the morale of the employees. And they are becoming more and more tricky because of the possibility that insiders may act in the interest of external organizations or even work together to create an inside-external problem. Why? Because the insider is somebody within the organization that has authorization, it is very difficult to predict when an insider attack will occur, and it's also very difficult to protect against insider attacks. They are typically situations that occur when employees transcend their rights and their duties. As a consequence, organizations that suffer from insiders, they feel as having less control, they feel as being less efficient. That can also create suspicions, a bad atmosphere, and so on, that this can be very damaging in itself. And often, management is not ready to act in these situations because they fear the consequences, especially if they are not sure about what is happening. They will delay their response, and in this way, help making the insider attack more effective. Management will often misperceive the risks. They don't have measures for measuring the risk, and therefore they don't perceive it. It goes undetected under their radar shield. Or it could be that they are not prepared to think about insider risk. They do not estimate it realistically, and because of that, they don't take action to identify and to measure it. Or it could be simply that they do not know that there are tools and techniques that can be used, also in the case of insiders. Therefore, many organizations, they are pay much more attention to outsider attacks that then do to insider attacks, to the point that they simply disregard the possibility of insider attacks. Some years ago we had a project on insider threat here. One of the master students tried to do an analysis similar to the one that was done in the United States by CERT at Carnegie Mellon, and then we approached many companies and organizations in Norway, asking them to cooperate in our project. Well, very few organizations said that they wanted to cooperate, which is again one of the barriers that you have. Organizations are afraid that sensitive data may come out, that one may know that they have had insider attacks, that they might lose customers. So even if you write and say, and this is, we write a non-disclosure contract, and we are not going to release any information, and in the thesis we will write generically, we will not name the organization that is working with us. Even then, they are very afraid of cooperating. They think maybe we are identified indirectly. So many organizations declined cooperation, but then those who said yes, we will cooperate with you, turned out they told us we don't have insider attacks. So that was not a very successful master thesis, because the analysis we did with the few organizations that cooperated with us didn't reveal anything of importance. In reality, what the analysis revealed, the thesis revealed, is that we had a strong suspicion that the majority of organizations who didn't cooperate with us were those that had internal insider attacks. But that was an indirect insight, and one that was not validated, because sometimes the organizations may not have resources to cooperate with you. So even those who said we will not cooperate, or didn't respond, or whatever, they may have done that out of lack of resources. So therefore, we didn't learn very much. point is, according to Schulz, and this is an old insight, there are, even if there are many more outside attacks than inside attacks, the probability of an inside attack to succeed is so high that in practice, there are, at least in 2002, there were more successful attacks on organizations coming from the inside than from the outside. And Schulz concluded also that inside attacks pose greater risk to organizations than did outside attacks. Probably this, the picture has changed by now, because the outside attacks, they are becoming more and more efficient. They are much more powerful tools to penetrate organizations. So in a sense, with very powerful tools, outside attacks can be conducted more and more from the inside. And then you have the other kind of attacks that is not mentioned here, which is the social engineers. Social engineers, in a sense, they are outside attacks. They come from outside. On the other hand, the way they attack is by passing as insiders. So what they do is create kind of Trojan horse insider, in terms of a person who comes into the organization, looks like an insider, but is acting in the interest of the outsiders. So what is this? Is this an outsider attack? Is this an insider attack? It is an outsider, but it is operating from the inside like an insider. Among the insights that come from the analysis of insider attacks, they show that some organizational policies, the culture in some organizations, increase the risk of an insider attack. So for instance, people who are very, very good, they tend to get more freedom. And if they turn out to be persons who plan an insider attack, then they have far greater means, both because of being very good and the fact that they have got more rights and more possibilities and more tools at their disposal. Sometimes the problem is that these star players, they get wide rights and privileges, and then perhaps there's a turn of the tide by whatever reasons, new management or new policies or new whatever, and then the star players, soundly, they get their rights restricted. Some of them react offended, and there have been cases where star players, on being restricted in their rights, get vengeful and commit insider attacks. Another thing that happens is that those known indicators that something may be developing, some insider attack may be occurring, often are ignored. Of course, if the organization is not observing best practice in information security, then that increases both two things, both the risk of being abused, because some people who perform insider attacks, there may be people who are attracted to perform the attack by seeing that security is weak. So there are always persons, it's a possibility of that you have a person in the organization who feels attracted by the possibility of short-term gain. Not everybody is 100% reliable, and those who perhaps in many situations will perform according to the rule will not do it if they see that there are tempting possibilities of abusing the tools and the position. Another aspects that may increase the risk of insider attacks is bad hiding but routines of screening when you hire employees, or not ongoing monitoring of employees, which of course is a difficult issue, because you wouldn't. It is a difficult thing to continuously monitoring people who are working in your place. You like to feel respected and trusted, and you feel somebody is looking above your shoulder all the time and considering you a risk and so on. That may annoy some people. And then you do have people with personal problems. And people with personal problems, they may react in irrational ways, especially if they become resentful, if they have the feeling that they are not respected, that their problems are due to the organization that is not respecting them. What is very important is that companies should educate employees and make this feel them that they are appreciated and worth, and that the company relies and they perform. But the companies and the organizations must also be clear in saying that violations, they will be prosecuted. But often this is not done, because a process of prosecution might leak out, and then the organization's reputation might be impaired, and they may lose customers. So these are very tricky things in relation to the situation with your own employees. The capability motive opportunity model states that to commit an attack, the perpetrator must have three conditions. First, it must be capable to commit the attack, which means it must have the knowledge, it must have the tools to do so. Second, there must be a motive for the person to do that, whether it is out of gain or revenge or whatever. And finally, it must be possible. There must be an opportunity to use these capabilities, employ and the motive to actually commit the attack. So that gives you a line of analysis for inside the threat, understanding capabilities, charting motives, and opportunity. Opportunities, of course, about having a security. How many opportunities that you have for an attack depends on the level of security. There is an early study that has been corroborated by further study later. It was done in 1998 by Suler. And he observed that malicious insider very often, out of human conditions, act before the attack in a way that is indicative that there is a problem. So often the attitude escalates, so they are not just decided to commit the attack immediately, and before they do that, they reveal that something is not as it should be by the way they act. They will behave aggressively, undesirably, or they will even speak about things and so on. So these are considered to be potential precursors of an insider attack. The problem is, of course, that there might be precursors and no insider attack. So precursors very often precede, they come before an insider attack, but often there are such undesirable behaviors that are just like that, undesirable behavior, but they are not preparation or indications of an insider attack. But the conclusion from Suler is that companies should become observant if they see that employees are behaving in undesirable manner. This could be a possible indication of preparing an insider attack. So much of the research on insider threat is about this kind of behaviors and how likely they are to relate to insider attacks. So even if you have an organization that is dealing with the behavior of the employees, according to Einbechter, it's in principle possible to develop technologies to detect insider attacks. It's not only about the intrusion detection systems, it's about the patterns that they reveal and understanding them. So he proposed network intrusion detection systems, network node intrusion detection systems, host-based intrusion detection systems, detection systems that look for anomalies, things that are not as usual, and distributed intrusion detection system. I'm sorry about the noise here, they are working outside, in, so that's not very nice that they have planned this work while there are still lectures going on. But there's nothing I can do. Schulz, Einbechter's approach is being continued, but we don't have such solutions yet. Another approach by Schulz is to develop models considering multiple indicators, and out of them analyze risks and probabilities and patterns of that we indicate an insider attack. They had to do with those precursors, this undesirable behavior, those markers that can be detected. It has to do with things that could indicate that errors are committed on purpose, meaningful errors. It could deal with activities that could be considered to be preparatory for an insider attacks. It has to do with looking at different patterns of uses and see if they form indications that they together point to an insider attack. It has to do with what people say, because often they reveal or they indicate secrets are difficult to keep. It has to do with traits and possibility and personality. This was proposed more than one decade ago, and in a sense it's a very, very interesting avenue of research, but it is a very difficult one, and today we don't have such a solution, such a representation to the point that is mature enough to be used. Then, as I mentioned, the CERT Coordination Center, which is a part of the Carnegie Mellon University, originally it was called CERT, and it was what today we call a CERT, but then it expanded its activities. Working with the Secret Service, they started an insider threat study in 2003, and I collaborated with them. I was in 2003 at Carnegie Mellon and had some lectures on system dynamics modeling. And then we had in 2004 collaboration involving two European universities, my university, University of Agder, the one where I am 100% employed. Here I am only 20% employed. So the University of Agder was involved, and the University of Navarra in Spain was involved. And then in the US we had the University at Albany, Worcester Polytechnic Institute in Worcester in Massachusetts, and Sandia National Lab. And we all worked together with CERT and the Secret Service to study insider threat. And then, over the years, CERT Coordination Center and the U.S. Secret Service published a number of reports, and they are freely available, so you can just Google for them and you will find them. So there was the one dealing with insider threats in banking and finance sector that was published in 2004. Then we had insider sabotage using computer systems in critical infrastructure sectors in 2005. And there, There were several other studies that we have done later. You will find all of them at CERC Coordination Center. And then finally, in 2012, a book was published, The CERT Guide to Insider Threats, How to Prevent, Detect, and Respond to Information Technology Crimes. And in that book, you will see references to my work and also expressions of gratitude for having started that. So what you need to do is to go to CERT, and this you can do by going to CERT site, which is CERT.org, I believe. There you find many interesting things about, so by the way, here you see resilience. So they are working really with resilience as well. And there you see maturity scale for defining operational resilience and so on. And you will also find about insider threat. So here you see publication in 2004, insider threat related to cloud computing. Insider threat related to intellectual property, and so on and so on. So here you will find a lot of things about insider threats. So if you are interested, please explore these pages. There you will find that they are interesting. So again, the web page is cert.org. So if you are interested in potential master thesis in the area of insider threat, then please approach me, or you can approach me also in other areas of insider threat. This is a very interesting area. Maybe I make you skeptical about that by saying that when we try to work with organizations, that we are not very responsive. But given that there is a lot of studies done in the United States today, then by CERT and so, then there are certainly to be possibilities of defining interesting theses related to insider threat. So now to the findings of these studies by the CERT Coordination Center. So in the insider threats to banking and finance sector, they found, and that was in 2004, surprisingly, most of the attacks were done with very little technical means, which again means that the staff that did this had easy access to sensitive information. And rather than being improvised actions, they were carefully prepared over a long time, which means that this pattern adds possibilities for early detection if you know what you should look for. In the question of banking and finance sector, most people who do these attacks, they were looking for gain, for money, rather than revenge. On the other hand, they couldn't find personality profiles that were common for the perpetrator. They seem to be very different. This could be perhaps because they didn't look for the right things. We don't know. Understanding personality is not an easy thing. Then there was no common method to detecting that something was going wrong. They were occasionally detected by different people and using different methods. The conclusion was that the loss caused by the insiders' attacks, they were considerable, and mostly they could be measured in money. They were bigger than, so to speak, the indirect effects on reputation. And typically, the attacks occurred while the people were working inside in the organization during normal hours, rather than creating openings in the system to attack from the outside. You could, in principle, do that. If you have access to your system, then you could create attack modes by opening access so that you could enter from outside and kind of being an outsider when you are attacking. As to the study on critical infrastructure sectors, which means any kind of critical infrastructure, it can be the main financial infrastructure sector, the one that unites all the banks and financing organizations, as opposed to the individual banks. It could be the transport system, it could be the communication system, it could be the energy sector, it could be the health sector. All these are considered to be critical for society. So all they studied insider attacks occurring in the United States. All this is about the United States. And in critical infrastructure, they found that most of the insider attacks, they were related to some conflicts, to negative work-related events. And before the attack, the attackers, the potential attackers, they were observed to act off in a way, in an undesirable way, concerning way, in workplace. In most of the cases, there were careful preparations to attack, so even if the people were aggressive and motivated by feeling disrespected or whatever, they spent a lot of time in planning the attacks. And they found that even if the majority of those who committed the insider attacks had system administrator or privileged access, when they acted, about half of them did not have authorized access. But they found ways of nevertheless of penetrating the system, perhaps because of the previous experience, or perhaps because they had created methods for attacking. It turned out again, and that is an indication of the bad security reigning at that time in critical infrastructure, that in many cases the insider didn't need to use sophisticated methods to exploit the vulnerabilities in the system, whether it was the applications, the processes, or procedures. They did find sophisticated attack, but the worrying thing was, in many cases, it wasn't necessary, because the vulnerabilities were so clear and so open that it could be exploited. The way the insiders attacked was compromising the computer accounts or creating backdoor accounts or sharing access, getting access, sharing access from others, which they use in the attacks. And often they didn't attack while in their workplace, but they attacked from outside by remote access using the backdoors or the vulnerabilities that they knew that existed in the system. In most of the cases, the insider attacks were not prevented or detected at an early stage. They were detected when consequences were visible, big consequences. And the impacts were considerable, and they had different kind of impacts, both financial losses, making problems to the operations of the business, damaging the reputation, and so on. As far as I know, there are not similar studies done in Norway, at least not extensive, so that's an area where it will be worthwhile to conduct these studies. So that was the end of this lecture. I will look if you are following online in some way, nothing in Skype. Let me see if there is something in terms of questions and answers. No, nothing. Okay. So let's look at the front page. Then I may, yes, considering the former examinations projects, I am not going to deal with them here in class, because if I do it, then some of you may be prevented from trying by yourself. Rather, what I am going to do is I'm going to put the solution in a web page, but I hope that you do an effort to solve it by yourself before you look at the solutions. That's how you learn most. And as I said before, in addition to this examination project, I'm going to upload another examination project we had before, so that you can prepare for your exam, for the second examination project this year, and that you can also consider them as exercises where you learn more things. So the last post today is about a study that we did in Norwegian critical infrastructure, that is the structure offshore. So let me fetch that presentation. This is a study that went over several years, that was funded by the Research Council of Norway, where we cooperated with Oljeindustriens Landsforening, which is the organization that unites the interests of the oil industry, oil and gas industry in Norway, and where we cooperated with SINTEF. SINTEF is one of the largest Institute of Applied Research in Northern Europe. It started in Trondheim. Today it's established in several cities in Norway and in many cities as well abroad. It's a very big organization. It's a high prestige organization, an organization that's it's very good at getting funded. Excuse me. I have had a regular, I must take this. Sorry about my voice. I needed something liquor all is good for my voice. So I have had a cooperation with SINTEF on several levels, with several sectors of SINTEF. The technology division, the division doing with processes, and recently a division that has to do with resilience. So I will explain the problem related to the introduction of integrated operation. I will explain what integrated operations are. I will explain the methods that we use and how we develop methods for risk dynamics, how we simulate it, and some work that we did afterwards. So, offshore operations originally, they were done in isolated units, the platforms, and everything that occurred was done on the platforms. The oil era in Norway started in the end of the 60s, when several oil companies announced to the Norwegian government that their analysis of the geology of the offshore shelf in Norway indicated that there were large reservoirs of oil and gas. Then immediately the Norwegian government and the parliament recognized that here was an opportunity for Norway to enter a new era, and rather than being dependent on the big players in the oil and gas sector, they decided to develop own expertise, of course in collaboration with Shell, BP, you name it. And then in the 70s they started extracting oil, and then more and more reservoirs were discovered and were exploited. And then finally one started also getting gas offshore, and you know of course that this has had a tremendous importance for Norway. And then it was understood that the high, rapidly developing technology and information and communication technology would allow to do many parts of the processes remotely by establishing operation centers on land, on shore, which will allow then to reduce the people working offshore significantly by 40% or even more. It will also allow to save a significant amount of the cost of operating the platforms. And because the extraction of oil and gas is dictated by the unit cost, originally it costs little to extract the first barrel, but as you are taking more and more oil or more and more gas, the pressure diminishes and becomes more and more costly to extract more oil or more gas. So when at the end the cost of extracting a barrel approximates the cost of selling the barrel, then it makes no sense anymore to continue operating. But if you are able to reduce the cost of extracting oil and gas, then you extend the life of the oil fields and gas fields by many years, 5 years, even more. So, if you consider that daily platforms are producing and extracting oil and gas in the order of several tens of millions or even more than 100 millions of Norwegian crowns per day, then making it cheaper to do that has a tremendous impact. And it was estimated, and that I believe the sum is now much higher, that the net present value of the added value of doing the operations remotely using information and communication technology will amount to more than 4,000 billion Norwegian crowns. A billion is what we call milliarden in Norwegian. So over 4,000 milliarder norske kroner mer i fortjeneste ved å gå over til integrerte operasjoner.